Oh, we started out slow, man. You know, never want to start out first drive and giving up a touchdown. But we was able to adjust and come out second half and make enough plays to be able to get us the win. The Dolphins is a good team, man. We watched the film, seen the corrections that we need to make, and now going to KC, man. This Miami Dolphins game don't even matter no more. It's all about the Chiefs now.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Thanks for being with us this week. The Broncos got back on track against the Dolphins this past Sunday with a 39-36 win at home after a loss against the Rams on the road really brought up a bunch of questions. Much of those were answered, but we'll get to that later when we go over the recap with our columnist Andrew Mason. As you probably know, at least if you're living in the States or from the United States, it's Thanksgiving week, and because of that, this is going to be a bit of a shorter podcast. So sorry just to disappoint you if you're looking for the full thing, but this one's going to be a little bit condensed. To start up, let's take a look around the NFL from this past weekend. We'll get to this in a little bit in our AFC West rundown with our correspondents Warren Judici and David Deschamps, but the week started off with a bit of a surprise as the 0-10 Raiders took down the hot Kansas City Chiefs on Thursday night. The Patriots continued a winning streak of their own with a 34-9 win in Foxborough over the 7-3 Lions. The NFC North leading Packers won 24-21 over their rivals, the Minnesota Vikings. The Seahawks handed Arizona their second loss of the year with a 19-3 win at CenturyLink Field, bouncing back after a loss to the Chiefs in the previous week. And then in the NFC East, the Cowboys rallied from 11 points down to move to 8-3 on the season with a 31-28 comeback win over the New York Giants. The Giants could not get their last gasp drive to succeed, and so they fell to the Cowboys, who then moved to 8-3. But the thing that everyone's going to take away from this game is not whether someone won or lost, but instead it was the absolutely stunning catch by Odell Beckham Jr., who managed to reach back as he was falling away and snag the ball with what looks like just three fingers, catching the ball, securing it as he fell, and getting the touchdown. Naturally, with Thanksgiving, there are some huge games coming up on the holiday. The Lions will try and stay in their wildcard and divisional races, playing Chicago in the opening game. In other divisional races, the Eagles and Cowboys will go head-to-head in an NFC East divisional rival game that could be a deciding factor in how that race plays out down the road. And then the nightcap on the evening will be Seahawks 49ers, with both teams at 7-4 behind the Cardinals atop the NFC West. But the loser of that game could find themselves out of the wild card race, considering how good each of those teams are. And then on Sunday, we'll be back to the rest of the slate. The biggest of those games will probably be Patriots and the Packers in the afternoon. And then Sunday, we'll be back at it with the rest of the NFL slate. The biggest of those games will probably be the two later ones with the Patriots and the Packers going head-to-head, and then the Broncos and Chiefs facing off for the night game on NBC. And in Broncos news, the team waived Brandon McManus and signed a new kicker in Connor Barth. Barth, a former Tampa Bay Buccaneer, has hit 84.2% of his career tries, though after an Achilles injury a couple years ago, he has not played in the league in a little while, but clearly they have confidence in him, bringing him aboard at this point in the season. And before I get into injuries, it was Thanksgiving week, so naturally there was a lot of news as far as community side, giving back, and especially with the Salute to Service Month, there was a lot of work with the armed forces. I was there with DeMarcus Ware as he made a surprise visit to an 8-year veteran who has been on the Marines, has been through 4 deployments, just a really neat experience. Now as we get to the injuries, we'll go with some of the tougher news before we get into some of the good news. There were 6 players who did not practice on Wednesday, all of them fairly important players. Monte Ball was out with a groin, Ronnie Hillman, foot still bothering him, Brandon Marshall going through concussion protocol, Aqib Talib recovering from a hamstring injury from the previous game, Julius Thomas still battling that ankle problem, and Kayvon Webster with a shoulder injury. All 6 of those guys did not practice as of Wednesday, which is the last injury report that we've gotten before this podcast was posted. So keep an eye on those. Hopefully many of them will get better in time for this Sunday's game against the Chiefs. And now for the good news, Danny Trevathan was back at practice on Wednesday. He's still on that short-term injured IR. He's eligible to return to practice, but will not be eligible to play in a game until that Chargers game a little bit later on this season. That'll wrap up our little introduction here. Now let's get into the meat and potatoes as I bring on Andrew Mason to talk about last week's win over the Dolphins. So the Broncos pulled this one out by 3 points. 39-36 was the final, but it was another slow start for them. They fell down by 11 points, going late into the third quarter. They kept up for much of that game, but really it was almost like a tale of two halves. The defense just hunkered down in the second half, held them to 7 yards rushing after a really good first half from Miami. Then Peyton Manning and company dropped 22 points in the last quarter. They themselves became up by 11. The Dolphins tried to do a late comeback, got a touchdown with about a minute or two to go, got the two-point conversion, but they couldn't get the onside kick, going with a two-kicker set there, and the Broncos ran out the clock. It was a return to form for Denver coming at home. They needed a win here after dropping the last game to the Rams in, frankly, a stunning fashion. The offensive line imposed their will on Miami for much of the game, but it really started to show in that second half as they strung together drives that were just efficient, effective, and ultimately got them that win. Our columnist Andrew Mason joins me now to talk about this game. Mace, this was a game they really had to win. I mean, of course, on Thursday night, you had Kansas City dropping that game, which kind of lowered the stakes a little bit as far as the divisional race. But how impressed were you with the way they got that win and everything that was involved with it?
Well, it was a gut check win. You fall behind 11 points on three separate occasions and you battle back. So it's obviously good to see the Broncos have some fortitude with a deficit. It was good to see them not get away from their game plan with that two-score deficit. We saw the previous week in St. Louis when they fell behind by two scores, they really abandoned any semblance of offensive balance. They didn't run the ball. In fact, they didn't run the ball at all in the last quarter and a half, 26 straight passing plays to close that game, but in a similar situation with a similar deficit late in the third quarter against Miami, they came out and they were establishing balance with the run and pass, and actually probably, late in the third quarter, down 11, the biggest play of that drive and arguably the biggest offensive play of the season to date was the fourth down call to the C.J. Anderson going for 20 yards. That was a play that as Peyton Manning described, it looked like he audible at the line of scrimmage, but there was actually enough time in getting set to where Adam Gase was able to change the play from the sideline, let Peyton, know, and then he made the necessary adjustments and got it to C.J. Anderson and made it happen. So that part of it was good. There are still things that you're concerned about. You would have liked to have seen the defense play better in the first half. In the second half, a little bit better pass rush. They finally got to Ryan Tannehill for a sack in the third quarter and put him under duress. They were blitzing from time to time in the first half, but it wasn't, successful at knocking Tannehill off kilter. And then the second half, it was a little more successful at getting him off his rhythm and led to the sack and helped lead to the to an interception later. So that part's a positive. You want better work in coverage than you had throughout the game, and some of that's owing to injuries to Aqib Talib and Kayvon Webster, which could have an impact on this week's game in Kansas City as well. But more positives than negatives certainly, but at the same time, I'm not sure the Broncos have completely solved every problem. I think people are going to look at the comeback. They're going to look at how well the offensive line play. And I think some people are going to jump to the conclusion that every issue is solved. It's not going to be solved with one game, and certainly not going to be solved with one home game, considering that most of this team's troubles to date this year have been on the road, where they're 2-3, and the only two teams they've beaten are 2-9 and 1-10.
It is definitely impressive that they dropped 22 points on a Miami defense that has kind of gone under the radar. They're top five in a lot of categories, not only per game, but per play stats, which is, frankly, more significant.
You're coming around to my side on that. I like that.
I mean, once you watch this Broncos defense, like especially early on, so many teams only pass, and so you look at per game stats for passing against the Broncos, and they don't look all that great, but when you looked at per play stats, because, you have to adjust for that.
Yeah, per play and first down percentage are to me kind of the golden standards of the raw stats. Now you can get into kind of the ones that are massaged for situation and all that, like you see on Football Outsiders and stuff. But if you want kind of just a quick view to understand per play and first down percentage, and the Broncos are doing pretty well in both.
Plus, you also, just in this game in particular, when you talk about first downs, the third down conversion rate was key in this game. They converted 9 of 13.
A lot of them were third and shorts. Now, I think we can look back. Obviously, there was a big play on a third and 20 late in the second quarter on the touchdown drive. But, you know, most of these were third and short, or as coaches sometimes call it, third and manageable. So, and that was because, you had balance from the run game. Instead of losing yards as the run game had often done on first down, you're picking up 3-4 yards of carry right off the bat or first down, sometimes even more than that. And so that's why you're able to look up on third down to see third and 2, third and 3, third and 4. And for this offense, as efficient as the passing offense is underneath, and as efficient as the running game was as a viable threat to force the defense to play honest, you're able to convert a lot of those. So if the Broncos continue to work this run game and get the same kind of success running the ball on first down, I think you're going to see more 9 of 13 type games on third down from this offense.
And conversely, that third and manageable was something that Miami could not get going in the second half. You look at the average yards they had to go on third downs in that second half, and it was about third and 12. One of those was converted by penalty. It was that weird play where Vaughn got an interception off a tip pass brought back by, I think it was defensive holding. So other than that, though, they only converted one other of those. So the defense stepping up late helped get the ball back to the offense and got them those chances to score so efficiently late in the game and get that comeback win. So with that, let's go and look at the AFC West, how it performed this past week. A little bit of a shakeup with the Raiders getting their first win. And let's bring on David and Lauren now to talk about that. So the AFC West race got off to a bit of a weird start this week on Thursday night. The Raiders were 0-10 coming into this game. The Chiefs were on a 5-game win streak and had positioned themselves tied with the Broncos for the lead, though the Broncos did hold the tiebreaker. But you kind of just assumed the Chiefs would just keep on rolling, and they didn't. And then elsewhere, you had San Diego getting their first win after a bye week, after a little skid they had, and now all three of those teams are kind of in this very close race atop the division with the Broncos leading by a game. Let's start off here with the Chiefs and the Raiders in a huge upset. The Raiders got their first win of the season, 24-20 at home in a primetime game. No one was really expecting it. It looked like they almost were going to blow it, but they pulled it out, got their first win of the season, and now I'm joined by Warren Juicy, who's been following the Raiders all season long, to talk with me about this game.
So I take back everything I said about these guys the past few weeks. You know, the things that they struggled with that were really hurting them, like the run game on offense and the defense overall, really shined in this game. And, you know, it was a pretty exciting game. I think we were all pretty nervous here watching it, and it ended up being a pretty exciting finish. But, you know, the Raiders got out to an early lead. You know, I think it was their biggest lead of the season, 14 points. Latavius Murray, who wasn't really a factor early on this season, came out, two rushing touchdowns, actually. And
a 90-yarder.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, one was a 90-yarder, which is the longest offensive score in the NFL this season. And he had an 11-yarder as well, and so that put the Raiders up 14-0, and then the Raiders were able to get in a field goal before the end of the half. And, you know, so that gave them a little bit of momentum going into the second half. But then the Raiders got put a field goal up. But the Chiefs had three consecutive scores to give themselves a 20-17 lead with 9 minutes left in the game, and you know, one of those was an Anthony Fasano touchdown. It was a great touchdown. Jamal Charles touchdown catch, and then another field goal. But the Raiders did an excellent job on that following drive, you know, taking up time on the clock. They drove down the field 80 yards in 17 plays and took up 7 minutes and 21 seconds on the clock, and then they finished up that drive with a James Jones touchdown catch to take a 4-point lead, forcing the Chargers to they needed a touchdown to win. And so the Chiefs got the ball back with just over a minute and a half left. And, you know, with this Chiefs offense, it anything's possible. You know, Alex Smith at the helm, Jamal Charles. But the Raiders defense, who was solid all game, stopped him there. And I guess Ben can probably tell us a little bit more about how surprising this loss was for the Chiefs. And I guess a little bit more about that last drive.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a reversal of fortune there for the Chiefs for a lot of this game. The slow start really hurt them, which is strange to see against the Raiders. They were down quickly, you know, 14 points to nothing. They had kind of had to go away from their running offense. And though they were doing fine in it, they had 72 rushing yards in the first quarter, but they just had to start going to their offense through the air. And playing from behind didn't really suit them, though they did come back. But the major thing here was the third downs on either side. You know, they were exceptional until this game. They ranked in the top 10, both on offense and defense, in third down conversions. And then they just weren't good at it in this matchup. They went 2 of 14 on offense, and they allowed the Raiders, who were normally bad, they were 28th on third down conversions, and they let them convert half of them, half of 16. So the execution from them just wasn't there. They haven't done well against rushing offenses, and though the Raiders' rushing offense has been almost non-existent, they let them just run all over them, especially in the first half. That 90-yarder was a backbreaker. As far as explosive plays, explosive just isn't a word you use with the Raiders' offense. In that last drive, once again, they had to go to kind of a comeback, and it looked like they had a really good shot at getting this game. I mean, when you're playing the Raiders, this is a team that has a lot of key players who are young, and they have some experience. You know, you really could have had that comeback win in the last couple minutes. Plus, I mean, they got really good field position starting off that drive. DeAnthony Thomas had nearly a 50-yard return all the way out to about the 40. I don't want to say they had this game wrapped up, but if you're comparing the execution from Kansas City's offense versus Oakland's defense, you kind of thought that the Chiefs were in great position to pull this one out. Oakland had some penalties there towards the end that really hurt. They nearly had another one, which would have been huge. They sacked Alex Smith on third down, and then they were just, you know, had a huge brain fart. They were celebrating like 10 to 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage. The Chiefs were about to snap the ball, and Justin Tuck, with a really heads-up play, calls a timeout to save them not only, you know, from a penalty, but from the embarrassment. On 4th and 13, the Chiefs just couldn't get the 13 yards they needed, turned the ball over on downs, and that was that. So really just a surprising game from, I guess, both sides.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that inexperience from the Raiders, and that was definitely shown on that sack celebration. I mean, I think C.O. Moore ran like 30 yards down behind the line of scrimmage, and then him and Khalil Mack were just celebrating like 10 yards past the line of scrimmage, and the Chiefs were smart and got to the line, but the Raiders weren't. That inexperience definitely showed. And
I think it's like they say, like, act like you've been there before, but the Raiders have never been here before.
No, absolutely. But I mean, still pulled it out. They're lucky that Justin Tuck's a smart guy and called in. But I know that he and Charles Woodson were very unhappy about that play, and I'm sure those young guys learned their lesson. So luckily for them, it wasn't one more loss, a lesson that didn't require a loss. So, but yeah, I think, you know, that while the Chiefs' last drive, you know, was unsuccessful, that last Raiders scoring drive was huge. You know, Derek Carr definitely didn't have the best day that day. And, you know, he finished 18 of 25 for 174 yards. But, you know, he did a really great job of managing that team and, you know, facilitating that comeback. I think I've said this a few times. He's been really poised and not afraid to make those tough passes and make those tough plays. And, you know, he didn't throw an interception in the game. And he definitely did not panic, even though the Chiefs had forged that great comeback. And, you know, he also ran for a few first down on that final drive in the fourth quarter. And that ended up winning the game. And, you know, I think that all this that last drive for that game-winning touchdown, it also comes down to how great. No one really talks about how great the Raiders' red zone offense is. You know, they reached they scored touchdowns on both of their trips inside the Kansas City's 20-yard line. So they're 14 of 18 on the season in the red zone, and you know,
they don't get there very often.
Very true, but you know, we can't make fun anymore. they got that win, but you know,
I disagree.
But we, you know, and I said this earlier, you know, the Raiders' run game was something that they really struggled with. You know, MJD and Darren McFadden could have not been able to get anything going this season. And, you know, it was kind of someone surprising who really stepped out for the Raiders in this game. And, you know, coming, you know, when they've come so close to getting that first win so many times, and I think what they needed at this point was just some spark. You know, whether it was a turnover or, you know, I don't know what it could have been, but I think this game it was Murray in the first half.
They exceeded in their running game, their total rushing yards, at some point in the first half, they exceeded any of their other rushing totals from any total game.
Unreal. Yeah, crazy. And I mean, he had 112 yards on four carries, and that includes two of those touchdowns. And you know, he actually, you know, he's not a household name. You know, he spent his last year, his rookie year, on injured reserve with a foot injury. And you know, these two scores were his first two as a Raider, which is pretty exciting. But you know, with those stats, you'd think he played the whole game and had 12 carries, but you know, he actually ended up leaving at the end of the first half, or near the end of the first half, with a concussion. He ended up not practicing on Monday. So, I mean, while he was a threat, you know, they may not be able to count on him this weekend against the Rams, as he's going through concussion protocol.
I mean, it was pretty big that he left, because that rushing offense did disappear in the second half. The Chiefs caught a couple breaks, not only with that, but Asante fumbled on a punt return for Oakland, turned the ball over around the 20 or 30. I think they had a penalty tacked on to that fumble recovery for Kansas City, but they turned it into a touchdown anyway. So the Raiders did need some of that more rushing offense to help them in the second half, and they still put it out anyway. So
yeah, definitely. And it some may question the Raiders, I mean, this win, because they did have a 14-point lead, and they did lose that lead as the Chiefs kind of got that explosion in the fourth quarter. But you know, this Raiders team definitely showed a lot of grit in coming back, and you know, making that, you know, creating a touchdown, a game-winning touchdown drive is not easy, and you know, they did it, and I think they showed that you know, they deserved this win, I think.
Yeah, no kidding, and to do it against a team that's looking to go into the playoffs, possibly, you know, before this game, they could have had a really good shot at winning the division had they, you know, if they were to have beaten the Broncos at home next week. They would have positioned themselves to definitely, you know, have a good shot at winning the AFC West. Now they take on the Broncos, coming off a win, but they'll be at home. But coming off a loss to the Raiders is definitely something you didn't want to do as you try and win the division. Plus, the Broncos look to have gotten their running game back and going, and the Chiefs are last in rushing yards per play allowed. So we'll see how they try and fix things as they face a huge, huge divisional test against Denver this Sunday. You know, for the Raiders, they don't have any postseason hopes I think they were eliminated a week or two ago.
You mean they're not going to win out now? Probably not.
I doubted that after last week. Before that, I did think they were definitely going to win out.
Yeah, the Raiders face the Rams in St. Louis. They are not an easy team to beat. Their record does not really indicate how good they really are. The Rams barely lost to the Chargers this week, which I'm sure David will tell us about. And these Raiders definitely have a tough test ahead of them. And the Rams have an excellent pass rush. And while the Raiders have done a good job at protecting Derek Carr, it's definitely going to be a tough matchup for them. And there were definitely some great moments for this. For the Raiders in this game, and some standouts on defense, including Mac and Justin Tuck had a great pass defense, and CeeDee Moore and Charles Woodson had a great sack on Smith too, and there were definitely some standouts in this defense, and they're definitely going to have to step up again if they want a chance to win in St. Louis.
All right, and with that, let's go to David Deschant for our recap of the Chargers' win over St. Louis. So, David, the Chargers managed to pull out their second win in a row after their bye week with a 27-24 win over the Rams, but it sounds like this game was kind of a weird one. What happened?
Yeah, it was very strange. We talked last week about the Raiders-Chargers game being very sloppy and kind of a slog, not fun to watch. This one was sloppy, but it was a blast to watch. It was very exciting. Lots of strange things going on. Phillip Rivers threw a pick six early. There was a blocked field goal by the Chargers with a weird ruling afterwards that ended up not factoring in whatsoever. There was a 51-yard touchdown by the Rams late in the first half that was called back by penalty. It would have put the Rams up 17-3. Instead, they ended up punting. The Chargers cut the lead to 4 before halftime and then stormed out in the second half, scored a quick touchdown, and then got a defensive touchdown on yet another weird play. It looked like Greg Robinson, the Rams' left tackle, just either thought he had help or thought the ball was already away, and he just stopped blocking Corey Legit, who stripped Sean Hill of the football. And the ball rolled over near Tavon Austin's feet, but he thought it was an incomplete pass and didn't bother to pick it up. Chargers ran over, took it back for a touchdown. Suddenly they were up 20-10 when they could have been down 17-3 late in the first half. So that was quite a swing there. Things kept getting weirder. Soon after that, the Chargers muffed a punt because their rookie Chris Davis, you may remember him from the return touchdown off of the missed field goal in the Iron Bowl last year for Auburn to beat Alabama. He got in the way of Keenan Allen on a punt return. The ball bounced, hit one of their feet. The Rams recovered, scored a quick touchdown. Another sloppy play, very, very strange. Keenan Allen looked like he was going to redeem himself on that one. He caught a 35-yard pass down inside the Rams' red zone, fumbled the ball at the end, lost it. So another opportunity for the Chargers, sort of squandered there. Keenan Allen did make up for it soon after with a 29-yard touchdown on a screen pass. At this point, the Chargers were up 27-17 in the fourth quarter. Rams were under a lot of pressure. They get the ball back and they go three and out. But we've seen from the Rams, they like to throw in a little trickery sometimes. They ran a fake punt. Johnny Hecker completed a pass to the gunner and picked up the first down. Rams marched down the field, scored a touchdown, and suddenly it's a three-point game. With just over 2 minutes left, the Rams still had three timeouts, so they kicked the ball away to the Chargers, but the Chargers couldn't pick up a first down and had to punt with a little under 2 minutes remaining. This is where things got a little crazy. Tavon Austin catches the punt and goes 73 yards the other way inside the 5-yard line with about a minute 40 left in the game. However, there were two penalties on the play. There was a penalty on the Rams for holding, and there was a penalty on the Chargers for a low block by Mike Cyphers, who went low on a blocker who's out in front of Tavon Austin. Very strange, because they both happened after the play, the penalties offset. at the spot of the second foul, which was at the 40-yard line of the Chargers. So the Rams were still in good position with a minute 40 and a timeout left to get the tying field goal. Very quickly, Sean Hill hit Kenny Britt for a 27-yard pass, got the Rams down inside the 10-yard line right away, and it looked pretty grim for the Chargers. At the very least, it looked like the Rams could tie the game. If they score a touchdown, they probably win the game. Instead, Sean Hill rushed it a little bit. On second down, he threw a horrible interception. Just watched Kenny Britt come all the way across the formation and threw it right to Marcus Gilchrist. Game was over, Chargers kneeled down, and they won by three. So really a strange game all around. The Chargers were maybe a little fortunate to come out on top in this one, but another win for them.
Yeah, exactly, another win. They're still in the division hunt, you know, somehow, despite losing three in a row, and, you know, these past couple weeks have been pretty rough, even coming off a bye week. Yet they're at 7-4 right now, just a game back from the Broncos. Are things starting to, like, look a little bit brighter now? That they can still kind of stay up there with these teams?
Yeah, they're looking a little brighter. I mean, you know, we've talked about how the Chiefs have looked like the better team of late, but with the Chiefs' loss, the Chargers are now tied with the Chiefs again for second in the division. And, you know, the Broncos lost to the Patriots, and then the Rams have pulled the Chargers closer. You know, they're one game away. They still get a game against the Broncos in San Diego. So things are looking a little bit up for them, for sure.
With this close win, what else did you take away for the Chargers?
Well, there are definitely a couple good things. Philip Rivers looked much more like his early season self. He threw that pick six, but it was really more a matter of him pressing. It was a third down. You can tell he felt the need to do something. They haven't been playing that well lately, so he forced it a little bit. It was a bad decision, but other than that, he was terrific, completed most of his passes, picked up a lot of yards, was very precise under pressure. So that was good. Ryan Matthews also looked fantastic in this game. He only got 12 carries, and most of those were very early. But he picked up 105 yards. He had a 32-yard touchdown on a draw play. Really shifty, a lot of quickness we saw from him. He looked very energetic and tough to bring down. So that was good. Keenan Allen was also very good in this game. He had the fumble, he was involved in the muff punt, but he still broke over 100 yards, had a long touchdown. Some things to be a little concerned about. The defense did have those two interceptions, and they forced the strip sack that was returned for the touchdown, but they really let the Rams move the ball in this game, especially under pressure when the game was on the line. They were not playing well in the secondary, they weren't covering. They tried various pressure packages to get to Sean Hill, but they really didn't pressure the quarterback much today. So it was not impressive from the defense. They were also pretty fortunate to win this game. You know, they had the 51-yard touchdown to Kenny Britt called back. They had Tavon Austin not paying attention and not picking up the fumble, and that ended up being a touchdown for the Chargers. They gave up a fake punt. They muffed a punt. They also, on Tavon Austin's long punt return, really got the benefit of a doubt on a pretty poor penalty call on the hold against the Rams. So there are just a lot of ways this could have gone wrong for them, and you have to be a little worried that sloppiness will catch up when they play the strong slate that they have coming up.
And what do they have going forward here?
That's where things are not looking so great. They have to travel to Baltimore next week. One of the toughest places to play in the NFL. Baltimore just won in the Superdome against the Saints. Maybe that's not saying so much because the Saints have now lost three in a row in the Superdome. But nonetheless, they have to go to Baltimore, play the Ravens. Then they get to host the Patriots, who are one of the hottest teams in football right now. Then they host the Broncos. Then they travel to the 49ers. And then they travel to the Chiefs, Arrowhead Stadium. We all know how tough it is to play there. So that's a pretty brutal five-game stretch. It might be the toughest in the league the rest of the way. It'll be a challenge for the Chargers to win even three of those games.
Thanks for joining us, David, and thanks for joining us, Warren. Moving forward, the Broncos will hope to clear up the division standings a little bit in their game on Sunday against the Chiefs. With a win, they could move into a bit stronger standing going forward, and with a loss, it would definitely just keep things in the same kind of cluster that would just bring things even closer to coming down to the wire. And with that, let's go ahead and bring Mace back on to join us and talk about the upcoming matchup in Arrowhead this weekend.
Yeah, I think anytime you play a division game, you know, they're carrying a little more weight. You know, they don't really in the record book, but you know, when you're competing against your division, it does flip it a little more powerfully. So, you know, to go on the road, tough place to play there in Kansas City against a very good football team. So we're excited for the challenge.
Naturally, we just talked about how the Chiefs did this last week. Going down to the previously 0-10 Raiders, a lot of problems for them showed up in that game, especially run defense. In the first half, they gave up the Raiders' best rushing game that they've had all season in the first half alone. They ranked 32nd in rushing yards per play allowed. Just a clear weakness there that the Broncos should look to take advantage of. But, you know, they're coming back home to Arrowhead, and they're going to be looking to get back on track after dropping what could have been their sixth win in a row. The Broncos here could look to win this game and get out into a much bigger lead that gets even more hard to surmount as the season comes closer to the end of the regular season. Mace, do you see the Broncos taking advantage of that rushing defense weakness that the Chiefs have?
Certainly, and I think after the last game and success that they had running the football, you know, with C.J. Anderson going for 167, Anderson and Juwan Thompson combining for over 200 yards, and most importantly, the surge off the snap that you consistently saw from the offensive line, which was massive in generating that running game. I love watching the first play from scrimmage of the game against Miami, because you see the offensive line, the starting five plus Paul Kornick working as an extra tackle, just they all get a push and they're 2 or 3 yards into the Dolphins defense, pardon me, and at that point it's pretty easy for C.J. Anderson to get an eight yard carry. In the last three games on a per carry basis, Buffalo's, you know, the Chiefs have allowed an average of 5.0 yards to Buffalo, 5.5 yards to Seattle, 6 yards to Oakland, and you know, frankly, that's right in the Broncos' wheelhouse based on what they did against Miami, a pretty tough run defense, and based on what they want to do going forward. They, you know, sometimes losses can be cathartic and really get everyone back on point. And I think that Rams loss was one in that it forced the Broncos to understand that, yeah, okay, you know, passing the ball might be what this offense does best, but you have to make a concerted effort to run the football. Now, that being said, the Chiefs, I'm sure, they're going to look at their recent form against the run, and they're going to try to fortify that. But if they do that, let's say you're bringing, you know, an extra safety forward, you know, let's say you're bringing your slot, you're making your slot corner more involved in the run defense. Let's say you're not dropping your linebacker into coverage. If you do that, then you're going to open up lanes for the passing game down the field. And, you know, the one thing that Peyton Manning is so good at doing before the snap is, you know, kind of diagnosing the intent of the defense and finding the weak point. So if Kansas City overcompensates to stop the Broncos' run, that's going to open up things for the passing game, which has burned the Chiefs in recent years as well.
As far as the Chiefs' defense in the passing game, you also have to worry about their pass rush. They have a great nose tackle in Dontari Poe, and of course they have one of the league's best pass rushers and sack leaders in Justin Houston. Do you see that being much of a worry for the Broncos' offensive line?
It's what you always have to consider, and especially if Houston, you know, really emerging, you know, kind of taking the mantle from Tom Bahaly on the edge as being the primary pass rusher from the Chiefs. But you mentioned Dontari Poe, and when I watch the Chiefs' defense, it's always Poe that makes that thing go. It's Poe that's drawing the double teams. And unlike a lot of defensive tackles, nose tackle type players, Poe doesn't have to come out. You see him playing 75-80% of the snaps a lot, whereas a lot of, you know, good defensive tackles in the league kind of conserve their, you know, their, keep them fresh and maximize their effectiveness. You'll see that some those guys will play something like, say, like 50-55% of the snaps, and Poe is not that kind of guy. You see him drawing double teams consistently. You see him really wreaking havoc for an opposing offensive line, and really containing him and making sure that he isn't collapsing the pocket from within. That's job one. But then job two is making sure that if you've got two men on Dontari Poe, that everyone else is winning their one-on-one matchups on the outside. And that's where it's going to be really important for the guys on the edge, you know, Ryan Clady and Luis Vasquez, to be able to hold up those edge rushers, because if they can't take care of them one-on-one, that's going to limit the Broncos' offensive opportunities, because then you've got to keep a tight end in to chip and help out, or you've got to keep a running back in to chip and help out, and that's one less target for Peyton Manning.
And one of the other things about Kansas City's defense is they got a really tough blow, not only just on the football field, but just in general with the, I think it's a lymphoma diagnosis to safety Eric Berry. We, of course, want to wish him the best and a speedy recovery. But he's one of the best safeties in the league and just a great all-around person. So, of course, we're hoping for him to be back on the field as soon as possible. Elsewhere in the game, you have to worry about Jamaal Charles. I mean, he only had a couple snaps in that first game against the Broncos earlier this season in week two. I mean, as Chris Harris was talking about, the guy is just dynamic in the open field, can go between the tackles. They use him a lot on screen passes. He can just do it all, and he's back to form.
He is, and you know, over 5 yards a carry, eight touchdowns on the season. But the thing is, they have a nice complementary part as well. Even though his per carry average is down, he's been particularly effective near the goal line, and that's Nile Davis. And the two of them have already combined have close to 1,200 yards on the season and 13 touchdowns. And you have to kind of view them together, I think, because they complement each other very well, and the Chiefs. Aren't afraid because Nile Davis can make some plays. The Chiefs aren't afraid to give Jamaal Charles a rest for a possession or two earlier in the game to make sure that Charles is fresh at the end of the game. Now, you talked about Charles' effectiveness on screen passes. That's actually something that, if you look at the Broncos' defense the last couple of years against Charles, they've really done a good job of minimizing the effectiveness of the screen pass. As dangerous as he is in the run, even though his numbers this year don't reflect it, he can be more dangerous on the screen game or in the flat because of his ability to make plays in the open field. I mean, you know, it's something that has not been as effective a part of the Chiefs' offense this year. They've kind of, especially in the passing game, you know, Charles's longest play is 30 yards. He's averaging 7.3 yards per carry. The screen game to him has not been as explosive, just as their passing game hasn't been as effective in creating explosive plays. Their longest pass of the year is only 34 yards. That doesn't mean they're not going to try it, and certainly against a Broncos defense that could be weakened by injuries. Obviously, you know, Brandon Marshall's coming off of a concussion. He's going through the post-concussion protocol this week. Aqib Talib's got a hamstring problem, and he's been good against the run. Kayvon Webster, he's got a shoulder issue, and he provides good depth, and he's kind of that. He was that number three cornerback after Talib went down. So you're taking those parts. You're already down to Dane Trevathan, who's not back until the San Diego game. You're already down Nate Irving, who's out for the year. That's a lot of good parts that really help the run defense that aren't going to be available, and that should concern the Broncos going into this game.
And we've also seen T.J. Ward really move into that linebacker spot. They've been using him a lot more in linebacker packages, going away from their base defense a bit.
Of course, then you don't have him as a safety if you use him as a linebacker. That's another thing. If you move T.J. Ward up as a linebacker, he can be effective, but then you're going to ask more of Quentin Carter than you've asked at any point this year, and we'll see if he's up to that if the Broncos choose to use T.J. Ward more as a linebacker on every down this week.
Another thing I want to look at is the field position battle. I think that could be pretty big this game. They had Omar Bolden back returning kickoffs a little bit this past game against Miami. And then on the other side, you have the rookie DeAnthony Thomas for the Chiefs. He's been exceptional. Obviously, he'll have some rookie mistakes, some errors in judgment, but the guy can just flat out fly and turn a field upside down like really quickly.
And here's the key thing. They use him on punt returns, but they also use him on kickoff returns. They'll put him and Nile Davis back there to field kickoffs. Yeah, the last five games, they're averaging 45 yards per kickoff return. You know, seven of their returns in that span have gone at least 40 yards. And that's where, you know, the exchange of Brandon McManus for Connor Barth, that's where you're a bit concerned about the eventual result. Because McManus, although he struggled on place kicks, was great on kickoffs. He was third in the league with touchbacks, although that touchback percentage dropped from 75 to 50 for the season to 52 when he went on the road. So, you know, you're going to have Connor Barth, a guy who struggled on kickoffs when he handled them in Tampa Bay. Again, I mentioned this in my story on him on DenverBroncos.com. You know, kickoffs were the 30-yard line back when he was doing it. They got moved to the 35 after he was replaced on kickoffs by Michael Keenan in Tampa Bay. But, you know, leg strength, he has never been his number one thing. It's been more accuracy than strength. So Barth's going to have to rely on high kickoffs rather than long kickoffs if he's going to defuse the threat that DeAnthony Thomas and Nile Davis provide.
It'll be an interesting matchup. This could be two teams looking more to the ground than to the air, which might be a bit surprising with the Broncos' offense. The game is at 6:30 Mountain Time at Arrowhead Stadium. Be sure to tune in. I hope everyone has a happy Thanksgiving if you do celebrate it. And we'll talk to you next week as the Broncos prepare to face Kyle Warden and the Buffalo Bills.